Welcome back to the 2B1V podcast, Two Brains, One Bat.
You know you want in.
I'm Billy, and with me as always is my lovely co-host, Jamie.
Greetings and salutations.
As she says, as you do, as you do. This time, we're going to dig into a movie that is widely proclaimed to be the scariest movie ever made. And it probably has a deserved reputation for that, and that, of course, is The Exorcist.
Yes. A classic.
It is a classic.
And story and imagery.
Yes.
Effects.
And it's definitely, it's one of the new Hollywood movies of that era of the 1970s. Because it's a serious movie. You know, I mean, it's like, yeah, there's no camp. There's very little camp to this. It's a seriously made movie. It's a seriously written movie. A seriously acted movie.
It's I want to say it's one of my 5-star movies.
It's a 4-star for me. I think I prefer The Omen.
You shoot low when you score movies.
I do. Very rarely give it a 5.
Yeah.
But I think I honestly like The Omen a little better, but this is a very good movie.
Yeah, Well, I mean, The Omen is also a 5-star movie for me. But with me, I think I shoot more for cinematography.
Yeah, and this definitely, in this case, yeah, absolutely. I think this is a better shot than The Omen, and The Omen was shot pretty well as well. But this is definitely something interesting because, and I think it honestly, there's something here that I think everybody can take out of it. Although if you have a weak stomach at parts, if you're not fond of cursing, you're definitely not going to enjoy this. It's not for everybody.
No, this is strictly a horror movie for those who enjoy horror and psychological horror.
I mean, it definitely in droves. A couple things I wanted to throw out here. There were some biblical verses that I thought of before we did this.
Okay.
Because they are, I think they kind of fit within the movie's context. And in fact, one of them I came up with as I was taking my notes actually did come up in the climax of the movie.
Okay.
That one was Luke 10:19. That was one I remember when I lived in Texas. I went to a religious school. That was one that came up often in one of our religious studies classes. And that was where Jesus is telling the apostles, I give you authority over snakes and scorpions. Meaning, basically, you know, authority over demons and such. And
is
evil.
This the, you know, crush you beneath my heels?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. He like, yeah, definitely. Father Marin is saying that at the end there. And the other one is Ephesians 6:12. And that one is, we wrestle not with flesh and blood, but with principalities. Because this is, and that's fitting here. This is not something you can, this is not like Phantasm 2 where you can get a quadruple barrel shotgun and shoot this and kill
it. Right, right. Because, you know, what you're fighting against has taken over an innocent soul, an innocent person.
And it's, and even so, like, even if it wasn't in there, what could you do to
it? Yes, and even in the history of exorcisms, you know, not all of the people that they have been exorcising have survived these.
Right. That I think that may even be mentioned in the movie here. Our movie begins in Iraq, though. So. With Father Marin.
An archaeologist. They are in a dig in the heart of...
And he finds the St. Christopher medal, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Which is not of the age of the stuff that they're digging up.
Right.
Which is interesting.
They point that out, yeah. But he kind of also... That sort of gives him like a premonition of what's coming. Because the first 10 minutes are him just kind of wandering around. And you're seeing all the... Like there's people... arguing and everything around. There's the dogs fighting, and that's sort of symbolic.
And we see him actually take heart medication. I want to say these are
nitroglycerin pills, probably.
Nitroglycerin is the explosive, isn't it? Probably nitroglycerin.
Well, I mean, yeah, it is.
I thought they were just nitrous. No, that's the speed racer. Go speed racer.
That's nice. I think there are nitroglycerin pills.
I think you're right.
I'm pretty sure my grandma had to take them.
I'm not the one that you look to for, I'm sick, somebody take care of me. I'm sorry. I love you, but I'm not that person.
And you have the...
My sister was. She knew the names of my medications when I was in the hospital. And I was like, she's like, no, you don't take the this one. You take this one at this time. And I'm like, which one? She's like, the blue pill. You take the blue pill, darling.
But there's danger everywhere. And as I wrote here, baby, to symbolize the omnipresence of evil. And then, like, he kind of has the stare down with the statue of Pazuzu there.
Yeah, and I watch this with the captions on,
mm-hmm.
Particularly because I was curious, if there are things that I wasn't hearing. And the captions go out of the way to let you know that the distinctual background sounds that are playing around him are actually prayer. So
interesting.
I thought that was interesting. The only time he doesn't mention that
detail, you wouldn't otherwise get. You know, if you're just watching it like as I do.
If you were Muslim, you probably would because it's probably something that you're familiar with hearing. And there's also a scene where he's talking to the archaeologist, and I think the words he uses is evil against evil,
mm-hmm.
and that's when the clock stops.
Hmm.
And the clock stops either at 12:10 or 2:00.
Now, are you? This
isn't the theory I was talking with you.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to ask: what version of The Exorcist are you watching?
Not the one where she does like the spider.
Okay,
the original one.
Right. I'm watching the original too. I want to make
that
certain.
What I made sure.
There's
I
an extended
well.
Cut.
Yeah.
With the
and that was actually the first time I ever watched this movie.
Same.
I want to say I was 19.
I was in high school, I think, first time.
And I watched it with my cousin, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
He came over and we watched it for the first time and we watched the original cut. And he told me where the extended cuts were and stuff. And mm-hmm. eventually I later watched that.
You get a little...
with my 6-year-old daughter, Chloe.
Oh, you are...
But
you are what the Spaniards call el terrible.
But Chloe will tell you that she really enjoys scary movies, and it was her decision to watch it with me that night. She was sick, so she was mostly asleep. But yeah.
So we're in Georgetown.
Yes.
And we have Chris McNeil. She's an actress, and she's a what?
We skipped over stuff.
Oh, okay.
So you were talking about some of the things that he saw there at the site.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I found, that giant demon that he finds.
The Pazuzu statue.
It is very uncommon for a demon to have a statue that big.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not worshipped and they're not revered in all cultures.
I don't think technically a demon, at least. I think in Sumerian, Middle Eastern cultures, Pazuzu was worshipped as a god. He was like a fertility god.
But it was very unusual for him to have a statue of that size.
Right.
Most of them were household statues or smaller.
And it may not even be literally there.
Right.
Based on like something.
Right.
Later
that
in the
was
movie.
Yeah. That was just for cinematic effects.
Right.
And we're also not sure if those are wild dogs or jackals.
Right.
And I also noted
jackals are a theme.
Jezebel was torn apart by jackals. Is that correct? When she was thrown from the top of the...
I don't know if they were jackals. I remember they were dogs. I know.
But I mean, dogs are technically wild jackals in the desert.
But also, you know, if you go into other things, the omen, you know, jackals mm-hmm. are kind of prevalent in that.
But
too.
We talk about the jackals and we have them, and we have that fight happening.
Right, yeah, that's the...
And I note that jackals or wild dogs is what tore apart Jezebel, and then cut to the actress.
But you know what we're talking about, the dogs fighting, you know what that reminded me of?
Hmm.
The two wolves thing. There are two wolves
inside
you.
All of them.
which one wins? The one you feed.
Ooh.
You know,
interesting. I have goblins inside of me.
You do. You're. They
only fight if I don't feed them.
I'm going to tell you, Jamie. I know you're like three goblins in a woman's suit. I've known for a long time.
Okay. I'm sorry.
We cut to Chris McNeil. She's an actress. She's up early. She hears something in the attic. I have written something in print there.
Yeah, I put the captions say it's a scuffling sound
mm-hmm.
because they're associating it with rats.
That's what she thinks it is. It's rats.
Yeah.
Put some traps. She tells like Carl, put some traps.
I can tell you that that is not what rats sound like when they are scuffling and making their nests.
But on top of that, though, it's also rats are considered unclean creatures. So that might be something that goes with it.
Yeah, very possible. And then we also get our first look at Reagan asleep.
Yeah. And her window is open.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be a recurring thing in the movie. And like, she's like, man, why is this open, you know? But
I don't notice it here, but I did notice it later on, you know, our first look of Reagan. Reagan is a tummy sleeper.
Yes.
I'd like you to keep that.
Yes. I'll keep it in mind. I noticed it the first time.
Okay.
And I think a little later, too, you see that.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris, like, hey, she tells like her butler, Carl, I think there were some rats, like, put some traps up there.
Whatever. Yeah.
And she goes to work. She's at Georgetown University there. Her director and friend, maybe lover, Burke.
It was trying to like allude that Burke was lonely and possibly gay.
Hey, you know, you could take it a couple different ways. I mean, I think you could say he's gay, but at the same time, he might be. Maybe it's a one-sided thing. Maybe
I get the feeling that he's also Jewish.
Mm, yeah, because they do later on. At the party. He's running down Carl because Carl is German.
Hmm.
He's like, oh, you know, Carl, you're German. You know, I mean, little things like that.
He's either Jewish or his family escaped.
Mm-hmm. We see a couple things here. You know, it's Halloween. She's acting,
mm-hmm.
and she's acting on a film where obviously there's like a student protest.
Yeah, they're on a campus.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I do notice there on the campus with her is a priest, a nun, and two students.
Mm-hmm. And Father Karras, Father Damien Karras, who is going to be a major, major character in this, he's watching her act.
Yeah, I also wrote that I kind of want to make her beret. Sorry, I knit and crochet, I put a heart beside it.
So here's an interesting thing. We see Karras, he's watching her, and he's smiling. She's a good actress. He's going to go see his mother, his elderly mother.
Yes.
He's a priest, and he's going to go see her. And at the same time, we have, you know, Chris getting home and spending time with Reagan.
Yes, and I put a note in here that Reagan is a sweet kid, but she's also very privileged.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make a note of that, the kind of life that she leads.
Yeah, she's asking for a horse, isn't
yes,
she?
Yes, yes.
But I noticed here...
But I don't get, like, a spoiled
right,
sort of sense.
Right, right. Well, her mom's an actress.
Yeah.
You know? And apparently a pretty big actress.
Yeah.
But the thing I see here is Karras is going to see his mother. We see Chris and Reagan and everything. And the bond there is basically the same. The only thing that's different is the age.
Yes.
Chris is taking care of her daughter. Karras is now taking care of his mother.
Yes. And I put on here that Karras is shot in a way that makes him seem very sharp, like the angles of him are very sharp, much of the way that they shoot Stallone in Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
They make him look very sharp and very rigid.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of make up for his lack of mental abilities.
I don't know about in this case, but you could say that about because Karras
right,
is pretty slick.
But they want you to have that picture of him as a boxer, as a fighter.
Maybe it's the fighter.
That's
going to be a thing
yeah.
into this. Because he is a fighter as well.
Yeah, and they want him to appear streetwise.
In a way, humble almost.
Yes.
You know, because
yes.
both Rocky and Karras, they're both pretty humble
exactly.
guys.
They're, I want to say, they
man
give him
the
a locality. Yes, the man of the people. We do find out later that he is like a top-notch psychiatrist.
Oh, yeah.
Like he could have been
but
like one of the best. But we get into that later.
That comes into like the whole faith versus reason thing in
yes.
here too.
Yes. And you get that a lot with exorcism movies because that is one of the requirements is they have
right.
to have a psychologist there.
And I was going like with the faith versus reason
mm-hmm.
thing too,
yeah.
because I think that's something that makes
we get that with Karras particularly.
Mm-hmm. I think that's in exorcism movies, though.
We don't always get the priest is the psychologist
right,
with the exorcism movies.
The whole faith versus reason thing there, I think that's part of the horror of it because, you know, you look at the world through a glass that's a glass of reason there. But then there are these things that are beyond reason that you slowly come to realize are there. And that kind of shakes your world. Yeah.
And then you have zealots.
Yes.
Who will see things that are not reason. Personal, real quick, when my mother passed away 2 days after Christmas, it was put into my head. And I'm not bitter about it, but it hurts now thinking, you know, that someone would do this to my children. Isn't it such a miracle that you got to have one last Christmas with her? Mm-hmm. And I was always given, you know, that was my miracle. Yet later on, you know, I see people with the same amount of disease that my mother had who were, you know, cured of that. And it did make me become bitter for a long time. This was some very zealous Pentecostal people that, you know,
I
miss.
Yeah.
Not going to dissuade anybody. I love these people, and I have nothing against, you know, looking towards the bright side. But, you know, putting it into my head, and also my sister that I'd lost, which, you know, that fed into a lot of her mental instabilities later on.
Right.
You know, where is my miracle if I got that miracle? I'm very wary about things like that. I want to go back to like stigmata. I want to be the priest is like, yeah, no, that's just water dripping.
Right. Know,
things like that. But,
and that's sort of, you know, Father Karras, he's kind of questioning his faith at this point. You know, I think he's at that point like, you know, I really could have been a great psychiatrist and I chose this life, but he kind of has regrets about it. And isn't there a biblical verse, like, you know,
he's wearing a St. Christopher medal.
Yeah, yeah, I think it is.
A medallion.
There's a biblical verse about, like, you know, no man who looks back after beginning to plow, you know, is worthy of the kingdom of God, something like that. But he's losing his faith. He tells that to a friend of his. I think, is it Father Dyer, I think?
And if you look at it in towards more of a religious aspect instead of a viewer aspect, this is the devil speaking to him, whispering, which you feel like this, something is watching.
I'll
watching
bring that
him.
Up.
Yeah.
He wants to be there for his mom, too.
Yes.
Like, because the rest of his family, they're kind of POSs.
Now, I will say this movie is the one that made me want to learn Italian. Not The Godfather in The Exorcist. Made me want to learn Italian.
You know, Reagan, though, you know, she's been getting up some stuff while, you know, mom's at work, you know. Mm-hmm. She found, like, the apartment they're renting there, she found a Ouija board in the closet.
Right. Captain Howdy. Mm-hmm. I also put on here for our listeners, do not use a spirit board alone, regardless of your religious affiliation. These things were created not for entertainment purposes, even though they have been sold. For such, don't use a spirit board alone.
When it comes to me, I just don't believe in it. I mean, I don't think there's anything to those. You know,
the
difference between. Yeah, I know I don't live with Annabelle. She left me a message though.
We don't know that. We do.
Yes,
not know
we do.
We don't know that.
Who else would write "rawr" in dust? I need to dust more. But speaking of relationships, Reagan has a basically non-existent relationship with her father. And it pisses Chris off. Like, he's overseas. I think he's in Italy, isn't he?
Right.
And he was supposed to call her. And Chris is, like, on the phone with, she's mad.
Yes.
As
a mother would be.
Yeah.
You know, I can't believe you forgot her birthday. I can't believe you haven't, you know, been paying attention.
A lot of GD gets thrown out. And I'm like, I wonder if that's kind of...
And
things too.
One thing that I've noticed, and I'll start this here because we also had her her speech at the beginning
in the movie,
is watching the way that Chris uses words like God's sake, Christ's sake, and Jesus.
Mm-hmm. She's using them in vain.
Well, correct. Before we get the possession.
Mm-hmm.
She has used those at least two times.
Mm-hmm.
So we have two sets of each. So she says Jesus twice, Christ's sake twice, and God's sake twice.
But she's using them in vain.
She's
not
using them in vain.
Right. And that's sort of get your right. house in order kind of thing. Like people have been to church, they'll tell you that.
I kept a score
okay.
of how she uses these. And it's not so much that, but as the possession goes on, she's more aware of these things and more aware of what's happening around her.
Reagan's in a very vulnerable place just due to the fact that her parents aren't together. She's with her mom's assistant, Sharon, all the time, rather than with her mom. Even though when she is with her mom, it's a very close relationship. They're starting to hear more sounds in the attic. Reagan, in a nice bit of foreshadowing, she comes to get in bed with Chris. And, like, I think she's on her tummy sleeping there. And, like, what are you doing in here? She's like, my bed was shaking.
Yes.
That's a nice bit of
shaking bed. Chris hears rattling in the attic.
She goes up to check it out. And it's a good jump scare there.
Yeah.
It's a real, because
and lights in the attic don't work.
Right.
Which we know is sign. Mm-hmm. As, you know, horror movie.
And she takes the candle. She takes the candle up there, and as she's walking through there, the flame shoots up. And like, that would freak anybody out. You know, if it's in your hand and that flame shoots up.
So who has power over those flames? Who has power over fire?
Probably the same person that defaced the Virgin Mary statue with the...
with the cones.
Yes, the cones.
Yeah, I still don't understand the defacing. I understand, like, the actual defacing of it, but I don't understand, like, the way that they did it.
I forget exactly how it was explained, but I was watching, and you should watch this too, this guy's channel on YouTube, Movie Timelines. Like I mentioned earlier, he was doing a 10 unanswered questions about The Exorcist, and that was one of them. I can't remember exactly what he said about that, but he had a pretty good explanation for it. That might just be another domino knocked down to strengthen what's going to happen here.
Now, I will also point out that the things that we'll hear later, Karis speaks his concerns and guilt about his mom and his faith out loud.
Mm-hmm. The Dyer, I think.
So these are not things that are just playing in his head that we're hearing like an overture of. These are things that he has vocalized.
He's something that's playing like it's... Well, you know what? It's the dogs fighting inside you. Now that mm-hmm. I think about it, you know, you got the struggle, the inner struggle. Huh.
And then, of course, we have Karis's uncle who shows up and shows some resentment.
Yeah, and that's Karis's mother is in the hospital at this point. And I don't think they bothered to tell him at first. Mm-hmm. And he's pissed.
Now, I wonder what the lapse of from where we see him with his mother to that point.
Well, we started on Halloween because like when I think Chris is going home, there's kids trick or treating.
Okay.
So we're definitely after that. I can't remember because this has to take place over several months. This
that's
movie.
That's my thought, but we don't get very much of a clear shot of time in this movie.
Yeah.
We don't have weather. We don't have calendars. We do have a recurring theme of clocks and ticking.
Mm-hmm.
I
pointed out that when he goes to see his mother in the hospital there, it's kind of the hell of the lost there, the sanitarium mm-hmm. thing. And like on top of this, not being there for his mom, even though he wasn't told about it, but because he wasn't there. Like his family, they're
crying. Yeah.
If he were there,
I see them. The family is stressing over money and health, which what family doesn't in a stake like that.
But he's more concerned with mom.
Yeah. Know?
And he's like,
he's lived a life at this point to where, not, you know, like a life of privilege, but where, you know, this is, I gave all of this up and God will provide.
Right.
And now he's unable to provide,
that's
which is feeding that doubt to him.
Catholic guilt, what yes. I have written down here. He's done. And she, of course, she dies shortly thereafter. And so he's mourning. Meanwhile, Chris is having a big party.
And this is where I noted that Reagan is a tummy sleeper, because I think we see her sleeping on her tummy, maybe for the last time
mm-hmm.
as Reagan.
Right. And big party. We get the argument between Burke and Carl mm-hmm. there, you know, because Burke's like, oh, you were a Nazi, weren't you? Father Dyer's there playing the piano. And I got to admit, when they did Scary Movie 2, and I think they actually did have Ellen Burstyn reprising that role there. When when Andy Richter's playing the, oh, this shit's tight. You always got a kick out of that. But Reagan comes down. She's ill. She tells the astronaut there, the famous astronaut, you're going to die up there. And like I was telling you earlier, that's in reference to the ninth configuration, which is right. sort of a secret sequel to this movie. It's, yeah. it's in the same universe anyway.
And I think it's kind of offhandedly mentioned that Reagan has anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So she is possibly medicated. She is the child of a starlet. So they are providing, you know, these things for her. We don't know if it is being provided for her underhandedly, like so many stars get.
It's the 70s, too.
Right, I mean, right. We don't know what she is being medicated with. Could it be Quaaludes to make her sleep? Could it be just normal, like things like Ritalin? I didn't look the history of medication, so I don't know.
Well, it's not just nerves. They do talk like it could be anxiety, but it ain't just nerves, because Chris, later, I think, in that yeah. evening, that's the bed shaking.
Yes.
She screamed, Mother!
Yeah.
And from here, I have it written down, everything snowballs.
It yeah, we start rolling. Yeah.
yeah,
we start doing the medical treatments.
Right.
And Karis does the male thing, and he pushes on.
He has nightmares about his mother. And I like the nightmare he has. She's standing up above the subway.
Mm-hmm.
And then she turns and goes down into it, kind of like his fear that she might be in hell. You know, like, because, I mean, again, he's having issues with his faith. He doesn't know. And it's, right. everything's being played with here. And they do the medical treatments for Reagan. And like you said, I have written down here, Karis deals with his grief in work.
Yeah.
As you did back then.
Yeah.
But they do the medical things with a test with Reagan. They can't yeah. find anything wrong with it.
And they refer to the bed shaking as her having spasms.
Mm-hmm. They do find that her brain has unusual activity in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do the spinal tap, which that was a scene that messed
those
people
are
up.
Not, yeah, those are not fun.
No. I've never had one, but I don't want one.
Yeah, a lot of the things that she's going through now are still things that I go through on a regular basis. They're not fun, especially. It didn't used to bother me until I've had to have repeated, like, MRIs and CAT scans, depending on which room I get. There's an open room and a much more closed room. I would give anything to have the machine that she gets.
That machine she has actually is like, man, I don't want to be on that.
Well, now it's like this close to your face and you're like completely enclosed. Mm. And hers is like an open air.
But that sound.
Yeah. The other, I guess the best way to explain it, the room that I get most of the time is just like the room in The One with Jet Li.
Okay.
Very, very similar to that one.
You know, even though they find the unusual activity in her brain, there's no physical evidence. They think it might be like maybe a tumor or something on her brain, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no physical evidence of it.
Right,
She keeps spasming. And the doctors, they're just kind of grasping at straws now.
Which they will do if they can't find what they
right.
want.
Right, there's nothing physical there. And she's having, you know, hearing voices and like she's cursing. And she's like having bouts of violence. I think she throws a punch at one of them at one point.
Yeah.
Maybe that's Chris later.
We start seeing flickering lights and the phone randomly ringing at home as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as horror fans know, flickering lights, get the heck out of there.
Right. Well, and like on top of that, they're wanting to do some, I think, temporal like lobe shots to her temporal lobe. And Chris's like, no, we're not doing that. But yeah, nothing ever shows up. They're like, psychiatry is probably going to be your next step. Chris, she comes home. As she's coming home one night, there's a disturbance.
Yes.
And she's like, well, that's weird. She comes in.
Yeah, she notices the ambulance and the lights and the stuff.
There's nobody there. And then Sharon comes in and Chris like, where the hell were you?
Yeah, she goes upstairs and she checks on Reagan.
The window's open again.
Yeah, and we see Reagan sleeping on her stomach. So we know at this point that this is Reagan.
Uh-huh.
So I put,
sometimes.
Did it leave her?
I would say no.
To push Brock out the window.
Burke.
Because
that's what like, Sharon's like, no, Burke was here, you know, Burke. And that's, yeah, that turns out
the window. I thought it said Brock.
That was the, yeah. It was the, that was the disturbance. Like, I almost called him Brock that time. Burke had gone out the window falling down the steps that are outside, and that's what they're doing. But no, I don't think it went out and went into Burke.
Well, I don't think it went into him. I'm wondering, did it leave her to...
Okay, I see what you're saying now.
To push him, because she's sleeping on her stomach at that point.
I think what it is with Reagan there, I think she's not fully, completely... put the snake has not wound its way around her all the way yet. I think it's still... The demon was responsible.
But that we have this... he's gone in... And we think we're assuming at this point, because of his interaction with the German waiter there, that he is Jewish. Mm-hmm. Could he have gone in there and started praying over her?
I
don't know the
my guess that there's been theories.
They are God's chosen people,
right?
There
have been I think even Movie Timelines brought up that maybe there have been theories that Burke may have been into children. I don't see that really with Burke.
I don't either.
I think what happened, in my personal opinion, is that he heard something and he went in to check on her. Like he heard, like either Reagan called out or the demon made a sound. He went in and checked on it, and that's when he's hurled out the window. That's my personal guess on it. Since he's there and Sharon, she went out to the store for a minute. Yeah, I mean, it's psych, and then when they follow up this, they start doing psychiatry with Reagan, and psychiatry goes poorly.
Well, she confirms that it's there sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes. I have to show you something. There's like a, Morgan, my niece, brought it up, because we used to laugh about this. There's a new series of shorts online about remake, like 30 seconds of a movie with bunnies.
Okay.
They do like little cartoon things, and there was one of The Exorcist, and like, Reagan, is there someone else in there with you? Sometimes. at this point, Lieutenant Kinderman comes onto the scene. He meets Father Karras, and he's asking Karras about Burke's death, because things seem to be lining up with the occult. What with the desecration at the church nearby? And that Kinderman thinks Burke might have been thrown, and it may be related to the occult. And Karras has a pretty good resume on that sort of thing,
yeah.
So he's going to him. And Karras is coming at it from faith and psychiatry, and that maybe Karras would be able to refer to someone even further.
See, and I also put in here, did it possess Burke? Isn't he Jewish?
I don't think it possessed Burke simply because of... This demon, as we'll find out later in the movie, and as Movie Timelines pointed out, it doesn't seem to jump willy-nilly from anybody. You have to be invited in by it. Reagan with the Ouija board earlier.
Right.
And it doesn't really jump from anybody else, into anybody else in the movie until, well, we'll get there. But even then, it's has to be invited in.
And honestly, my original opinion... Because until you had told me, about this hidden sequel, I always thought she was talking to Burke.
Oh, you're going to die up
there. Yeah, I always thought she
was talking
to him.
Hey, that's actually kind of cool. That could go either
way. That was always my thought on
Maybe she's talking to everybody in there. It's like it's playing with everybody's mind,
I always thought she was talking to Burke because he was the Jewish one.
Right.
The Jewish were God's chosen people. That was why I've always thought that it jumped out of her and shoved him out.
I think it would have done it to anybody.
It's very possible, but why did it not do it to Julie?
I'm just saying,
she's
Julie.
With her.
But oh, not the babe, right?
Yeah, the babysitter. Isn't she the one?
Sharon is the babysitter.
Oh, okay. My brain is thinking.
Dude, there was Carl's wife is in here. I can't remember her name.
I've always wondered, why didn't it do it to her or do anything
I don't
to
think,
her? Because she's the one with Reagan the most often.
I don't think Burke is really a practicing...
Or the maid.
I don't think Burke, though, I don't think he's, you keep bringing up that he's Jewish there. It's not like he's a rabbi,
Right.
He's a drunk old movie director, I kind of get like an older Roman Polanski vibe off of him, honestly. Which, kind of unfortunate.
He's got so much trauma in him. I don't think a demon would want him.
Well, regardless, Reagan's getting worse and worse.
Right.
They're trying to come at this from a scientific angle. And And the doctors are like, hey, you know, this is psychosomatic, maybe. Maybe you got to look towards exorcism.
During all of this, and this is also including later with her conversation with Karis, she's still repeating things in multiples of two in her conversation. She says Christ two times. Another conversation, she just says it once, but she says Jesus Christ in that same, so that's twice. And she slows down and she just says Christ's sake.
Yeah.
Once. So she's no longer repeating these God's name twice.
Right.
For the majority of this.
And it's you know, we haven't mentioned, we see what's happening with Reagan, and we've talked a lot about Karis, but Chris too. I mean, like, we're going there. This has taken its toll on her. She's worried about her daughter. She doesn't know what the hell is going on. Right. You got to imagine, like,
she's getting physically abused by this demon as well.
Well, that's what we're getting ready to get to, because Lieutenant Kinderman comes to talk to Chris about Burke's death, and it seems to be like he believes Burke was murdered by somebody, and at the same time, he sort of maybe implies, well, if Reagan was in the room, you know, maybe she saw something, and he's kind of implying maybe she did it, and like, no, not in as many words, you know, and Chris like, well, you know, anything, you know, anything that you know, comes up, I'll let you know. And he leaves. And as he leaves, that's when shit hits the fan.
Well, there's also a movie that she did, which I found was interesting.
He's a film buff.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Kinderman. He's like, could you do an autograph form for my daughter? Well, it's for me. It's...
Right. But the movie that she did was called Angel. And we do need to remember that demons are not omnipresent.
No.
So they only, which we don't know what kind of movie Angel is. Angel could have been a detective movie, like Angel Eyes, whatever.
Yeah.
But it is mentioned that she did this movie Angel, and he leaves, and things get worse.
Yeah, that's when everything hits the fan. There's screams and shaking, and Chris runs upstairs. And this is the scene a lot of people remember because it's
pretty.
We'll say this right here. A lot of people say it's masturbation with the cross there. I see it. No, it's stabbing. That's mutilation.
That's what I always saw. It was more of a mutilation.
And she's screaming that, like, that. Yeah, you know, I don't want to curse too much here, you know, but. And a lot of things are happening all at once. There's the mutilation. That chest goes across the room by itself. I think her head turns and she starts talking to... No, she smacks Chris. Yeah,
she smacks Chris.
She does
the room.
Other things too. But then she starts talking to Chris in Burke's voice. Okay, at this point, this ain't anything psychological. This is...
Right.
We've hit supernatural here. And Chris...
This is actually after the voices and stuff. There was a case which they did the second Conjuring movie based on.
Oh, yeah. The Enfield Poltergeist. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if that is where a lot of that...
Oh, I think it's probably common in that, you know, line of work or whatever. But yeah, at this point... Chris, who I'm looking at her, I think she's got a particularly secular view of the world and everything. He's being confronted with the fact, oh crap, this stuff is real.
Right.
And she how do you react when you see something
You know, she is friends with the other priest. I've done...
Right, right.
Flip my brain.
But it's sort of like a, you know, like...
And she's previously asked about Karis.
And, but, you know...
I feel like she was raised Catholic.
Right, right. I think this is like sort of like the, you see this a lot in these movies, that like the Catholic Church at that point had become more secularized and everything,
right.
You know, like demons are just metaphors for real life problems.
Yeah,
and everything.
Because they even talk about, you know, we don't do them anymore.
Right.
We don't do those anymore.
And I think Dyer is the one that recommends Chris to meet with Karis. And Chris, when she does meet with Karis, she's at her wit's end. You can tell. She's like, she's kind of like in disguise a little bit when she meets with the public. Mm-hmm. She's got a sunglasses.
Well, she's also got a black eye.
Mm, that's another reason. And she's also, I think she's smoking pretty.
Yeah.
She.
Yeah.
She's smoking. Oh. And she's kind of shaking as she does. Like she's scared.
Yeah, and she says Jesus Christ in this conversation, and this is the last time that she uses that language. And then the last any sort of biblical reference that she gives is Judas Priest.
And yeah, she's kind of scared away from taking it in vain.
Yeah.
Now, Karras here, we get a sense of his morality here. He talks, if a murderer came to him, he wouldn't turn them in, but he would urge them to turn themselves in. He's kind of hesitant to look at Reagan here.
Right.
And it needs church approval if they're going to do an exorcism, but he agrees to see her. And Chris, when they go to the house, Chris is even afraid to even go near the room, Reagan's.
Right.
And Karras goes in. She's tied to the bed on her back.
Yeah.
Arms out, kind of like crossed.
Yeah, you also have to remember that scene earlier where she's on the bed and she's being jumped up and down and stuff like that, that actually broke her back.
Yes. Yeah.
As well.
I think I was that changed when I moved here. Yes. And she looks awful now. And
yeah.
She's talking in that.
It's like that. Yeah, her, she's causing damage to herself.
Mm-hmm. That's another reason she's tired.
Yeah, we don't know if that is Reagan herself doing that, trying to claw it out of her.
I think there is a scene later, help me, is
it
on her.
There is.
Karras sits down and talks.
Like the scratches and stuff on her face are very similar to what you'll see on like babies where they can't control their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't control their nails. So I assume that's why she's tied to the bed, is she's trying to claw this thing out of her.
When
she is causing harm to herself.
When Karras talks to her, the demon claims to be the devil.
Yeah.
Which is, they always do that, like.
Right, right.
Like in a lot of like occult literature, if you know the name of the actual demon, you've got power over it, And there's a little back and forth, the demon makes like the drawer pop out.
I just wondered what was inside that drawer.
I've never really thought about it.
Whatever happened to the spirit board?
I don't know.
But I've always wondered what was in the drawer because,
And then, but like Karras, he sees that. And you can tell he's a little unnerved by it, but he pushes it back and like, do that again.
It's much too.
That's a vulgar display of power.
Yes, it's a vulgar display of power.
And they start talking to each other like in Latin and in French. And I actually looked up the things that Reagan was saying in French, and they're nonsense. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
It's not really anything of substance. It's
yeah,
like, you know,
it, it doesn't even, it, they don't even acknowledge in the captions that it is French.
Now, here's the thing. I think this is all since Karras is already somebody who's dealing with his faith and he's just seen a door pop open, you'd think, okay, this is interesting. But it's also, it's kind of playing with Karras into making him doubt whether or not this is
right.
an actual
and
case.
I suspect that it has been watching Karras.
Oh, he's the true target. I believe
absolutely,
that firmly.
Yeah.
I firmly believe that. He's the real target all
along. Yeah, and he's wearing the St. Christopher medallion. There was a St. Christopher medallion found with, I want to say, the artifacts
in
earlier.
Yeah.
We want to keep that in mind. Is that something? Who is St. Christopher? I didn't even look that up.
But I think there was a St. Joseph, too, that was mentioned in here. I don't know. But the thing, though, what Reagan is saying, a lot of the things are kind of, I don't know, it's like.
He's the patron saint of all travelers. The one who carries Christ, one of the most treasured, and is the story of the child he found and then carried across the mighty river.
Yes, yes, okay, yeah. Carrying.
He is the bearer.
Bearer, there you go.
Bearer.
And then there's also Karras, he says it's holy water and it sizzles.
Right,
it's actually
and it screams and it's like, it burns.
Mm-hmm. But it's. Getting to the point here, like Karras, he's becoming more and more certain. He's not sure about it, but when they start playing back the things Reagan has said backwards, it's calling for Karras.
Yeah.
And that's enough that the church is like, okay.
I put down that Reagan is the fifth Beatle, because it's speaking backwards and, you know, the Sun King.
Fall as a dead man, miss him, miss him. But it's like, you know, Karras, he's still uncertain, but he's getting more certain.
Yeah. And then the church, like, yeah, we're Nineveh.
Huh?
What's in Nineveh?
Nineveh.
Nineveh, yeah.
Nineveh?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Like, at one point, I am no one, which is Maron.
Uh-huh.
A priest. And what's in Nineveh? That's the place that I want to say that was one of the things that the demon was saying.
I don't know.
Where is Nineveh? I mean, besides, you know, that being, you know, the place where Jonah went to preach the word. But where exactly is Maron? Is he in Nineveh at this point?
I'm not sure. I think
would the demon know that he's in Nineveh?
The demon wants him too, because it's right. It's when they're talking about when they're calling for Karras. They're like, Karras, was he the one that he did an exorcism so many years ago in Africa? You know, and it's like it's the same demon basically.
Right.
It's
that's why I'm wanting to know, where is Nineveh?
I'm honestly not certain. But it's basically, since it's calling out for Karras, the church is at least like, we're going to do this. We're going to sanction an exorcism, and they're going to call Karras in. Where is it at?
It's in Iraq.
Okay. Well, that's where he was at the beginning of the movie.
So he was in Nineveh. So he was where Jonah went to preach to the people of Nineveh.
There you go. Another little layer of, stuff there.
Yes.
The room gets colder. Which
Jonah was also carried inside of something.
Hey! There's levels of subtext here. And like Reagan's and he inside was, of something.
And Jonah,
Reagan's inside of a great fish too.
And Jonah was questioning whether...
That's, yeah!
Very Karras.
Hey, that's nice. But the room starts getting colder and colder.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, could that be like a...
I always thought that was a ghost thing. I didn't associate that with demons.
Well, ghosts, demons, what have you. Some people would say ghosts are just demons.
From the heat.
Well, that, like, you could say maybe it's a reference to the ninth circle of hell, where that one was supposed to be cold.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's been forever since I've
heard. We have that iconic scene of Maron getting out of the taxi cab.
That shot, yes.
Tubular bells playing and, like... The only light, like all the mist is up and all the lights coming out of the window, and he's just standing there at the bag looking up at the...
Yes, the fog, the gas lighting that you get. That's where that green tint is representing.
Now,
we don't have gas lights very often anymore. And that's not a street light. That's a residential light.
Right.
At street level.
When Maron gets there, he takes charge of this. Whereas Karras is somebody who's, you know, kind of, I guess you'd say, lukewarm in his faith, you know. Maron, he's like, okay, here's what we're doing. He's very straightforward. He's like, you know, all right, we go in there. And then, like, the demon calls to him when he gets in. And, like, Karras is talking to him. And Maron's like, when we go in, we're going to ask only relevant questions to cut down on confusion. We're not going to listen to a lot of the stuff it says, because it will mix lies with the truth. And, like, you know, Karras is like, well, it's displayed several different personalities. And he's like, there's only one enemy. Maron's like, there's only one enemy here. We need to remember that. You know, like, he's like, Father Maron is the literal definition of the spirit is willing and the flesh is weak. Because he's an old man, heart issues, but he is... Boom, on top of this. And I haven't...
And I notice anytime Maron is in the room, you hear the clock ticking.
Maybe that's, the clock stopped, and now that he's there, it's ticking again. Maybe ticking down for the demon. But Maron...
I haven't counting down his...
I have it written down here. Maron don't take no shit. Everything the demon throws at it, like even spitting the pea soup in his face and everything, he's a wall. He doesn't react to it at all. He just keeps going. He never breaks stride, like metaphorical stride.
At one point, we have the tongue flicking.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, is it supposed to represent the snake's tongue?
I think so.
And man's failure at purity?
Could be. And the snake has always been a big image in Christianity and Judeo.
And of course, it goes back to what you had spoken of earlier.
He said, he even says Luke 10:19. It does everything to try to break his focus, because focus and order are the enemy of the demon. It wants to sow chaos. And, Harris is scared of a lot of this stuff that is going on. Like, when she starts levitating, he's scared. But Maron, you can tell the look at his face. Max von Sydow is such a great actor. You can tell the look on his face. He's refusing to be scared. But he's still an old man. But by the fact, here's a funny thing about it. Even though Karis is scared of this whole situation, seeing this happen and seeing Maron stand up to it's restoring his faith a bit.
Yes.
That in Constantine, when Gabriel's talking to Constantine in there, that humans can be so good, but only in the face of evil.
Yeah.
The demon, for all its parlor tricks here, seems to begin to weaken. But it's getting more and more desperate. They have to rest for a few minutes, though, because, you see Maron, even though he's like a wall in print, when he goes to the bathroom, he kind of, he kind of collapses.
It takes a lot of energy out of him.
Mm-hmm. He's got that weak heart. And it starts to hit Karis.
You get the overpowering ticking when Karis is in the parlor of that clock.
I'm so glad you noticed that, because I didn't. But it nearly gets at Karis. With guilt over his mother, it starts talking to him in his mother's voice. Before, it had made some pretty unsavory comments about his mother, but baby, why don't you come and take care of me? And he nearly breaks at that. And Maron's like, okay, I need you to leave the room. You're obviously not in the right frame of mind. And I'm going to deal with this myself for a little bit. Which, by the time Karis does come back in,
Reagan's untied
and
just sitting there.
And, Maron, he's on the floor, he's dead. His heart is given out, or maybe, I don't know. But, did you think that Reagan / the demon kind of looks a little disappointed sitting there? This is the big rematch it wanted, because this is the same demon Maron cast out years ago, and it's just kind of like, oh, really? I was kind of hoping
Holy mortal?
Yeah. And
it's like, this is the best you brought to me?
Yeah, it's like...
We've played this before.
I haven't written down...
Did I wait too long?
I haven't written down here. The demon almost seems like a cat that's distraught that the mouse it was playing with is dead. I used to have a little friend, but he don't move no more. And Detective Kinderman, he shows up. And it's mainly just to distract downstairs there.
Yeah.
It's... Doesn't really play much into it. And it was a St. Joseph medal. I have it written down here. It was a St. Joseph medal that Maron found. Look that up real quick. But, Karis, he's walked back in. And it's like this whole scene. It's the final straw. It's the straw that broke the camel's back here. Karis is pissed.
The universe was... Universal Church, families, fathers, expectant mothers, travelers, immigrants, house sellers and buyers, craftsmen, engineers, and working people.
Kind of fits in with a lot of things here, But Karis, he ends up tackling Reagan to the floor and just slam her on the ground. And this is the point where, you have to be invited in.
Yeah.
Because he yells, take me.
Yes.
Take me. And they do.
Karis takes the demon, and out the window he goes.
He's got, at this point, he has the moral fiber to fight back against it, even if only for an instant.
Right, and you do say maybe it hasn't wound enough around Reagan, maybe it hasn't wound enough around Karis.
The thing with Maron has kind of restored his faith, too.
Yeah,
and
Karis is actually able to make his last confession.
Well, the thing I noticed, there's that really good shot of when he's looking down. And you see, I think they do, lighting effects on his face for the demon thing there. And you kind of see him, looking down at Reagan as the demon's out of her. She's crying and crying for her mom, and it's almost looming over her. But then you see, like, he's kind of taking control when he jumps out the window, rolls down the steps, just how Burke died. And Father Dyer is down there to take his final confession and give him his last rites. And yes, everything.
But his head's not been turned completely around.
No.
Which we saw Reagan do, mm-hmm. which is what happened to Burke.
That is, yeah, playing with him again, like that whole thing. And again, I don't think the demon can just jump out willy-nilly. Otherwise, it would be able to leave as Karras did that. Karras, as I have written here, he dies a true Christian. He takes the burden upon himself as Christ did, and as we said earlier, the Saint Christopher thing, mm-hmm. like bearing, like
the bearer of children,
right? He takes it,
he carries the child across the dangerous waters,
right? Suffering the little children, and he wrestles with demons and he wins, even at the expense of his own life, as is right. That's what I have written down there. I think that the medal is given to Father Dyer at the end, I believe.
Yeah.
It's kind of a very sober ending.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't feel
finite.
There's no yay, we won celebration. Like everybody's still kind of like right. This. They're messed up by this experience. They're not going to church after this and being happy like in Shenandoah or something.
No.
You know, it's kind of sober and...
Yeah. And Chris tells Dyer she doesn't remember any of it.
But then the thing is when Reagan comes out, she sees Father Dyer there and he's got the medal. Yeah,
she like instinctively hugs him.
She hugs him, I think kisses him on the cheek, doesn't she? Like she remembers somebody was trying to help her.
Yeah.
And... They just kind of leave, like the house is, you know, put on the market. I think Sharon ends up like not working for Chris and the McNeils anymore.
Right.
And in the extended version, you get a little bit more of an ending there because Father Dyer and Lieutenant Kinderman kind of strike up a friendship there.
Yeah.
And that goes on into Exorcist 3.
Yes.
When that movie comes out.
Now on here, I noted how often Chris uses the words God, Christ, and Jesus in the movie before possession, during the possession, and during the exorcism. I also noted she regularly uses them in pairs of the same word or in triplicate of all of them.
This is going to be your theory.
And this, yeah, and this is not including GD.
Yeah.
And each time I have this is different conversations.
Okay.
Or different, you know, we have God's sake. That was her speech that she does. So those words.
For God's sake, you kids, you know.
Yeah, okay. God's sake. Another like monologue that she has, she uses Christ's sake twice.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one, she uses Jesus twice. Okay, this is before the possession. Possession
is really good.
During the possession, she uses Christ twice. And then in another conversation, and this is like during like all the conversations with doctors, she uses Christ, Jesus Christ, and Christ's sake. So technically, I guess she used Christ three times. And then she only uses Jesus Christ one more time during the possession. And then the final one is Judas Priest that she uses. So she does not use those words in any form again.
Okay.
During the exorcism or after.
Right.
And that was, I thought that was interesting. She is an acknowledgement of these words, and she acknowledges how much she is using them and how she is using it outside of faith.
And now that this whole thing is starting, like maybe it's just enough. Like okay, maybe I should.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to clean myself up a little bit, maybe.
And I don't know if that is her going towards more of a faith based decision, or I don't want any of this. Decision.
Right.
Because we don't ever at any point get a clear feeling of how Chris worships or
it's funny.
Because she also plays openly with the spirit board Reagan.
Like she's doesn't really like she like you said, she's probably raised that way and then didn't really believe it as she got older. Like I mentioned to you a couple weeks ago, I watched Exorcist Believer finally. And she is back in that. Ellen Burstyn as Chris is back in it. And in that one, she's kind of takes on sort of a new agey kind of thing about it.
See, that was what I was wondering too, because she's also in Hollywood. And we have to remember how integrated New Age is in Hollywood. Not to forget, you know, we have Scientology as well, which is highly and then started around that time.
Well, so, she's like in this, like they show clips of her on talk shows in the 80s talking about it. And when she's actually talking to a lot of the characters in the movie, she's really not in the movie that much.
Right.
Like it was a big deal when the trailers were dropping, she was in it, but she's not in it that much. It's sort of like, she's like, you know, even though it's she's been through this, he's still not so certain about the whole Judeo-Christian faith. People mention that there are things she believes that like she's like and God or any God for that matter. You know, she'll make statements like that. She'll talk about beings of light and everything. So that's kind of and even in that movie, which if we've done this, we'll probably do that eventually at some point. Like there are various different sects of Christianity in that are coming together for this exorcism in that one. Like you have your traditional, going to church on a Sunday and in a suit type preacher. I guess minister would be the term there.
Right.
You have a more outside the box, you know, lady who, you know, is more like what you would consider like a wise woman type, shaman type thing, you know. Stuff in there like that. Man, this movie is influential as hell, though.
It really is. I also have to note that when this ended, the movie recommended to play next was The Time Machine. And I thought that was a little creepy.
Annabelle! But, I mean, this is it's a good movie. There are several sequels. There's what? There's Exorcist 2.
Yeah.
3. The fourth one was actually kind of two different movies.
Right. I felt, wasn't it a prequel of sorts?
It was a prequel. The thing was, they released
both of them. It was based in Africa.
It was about Marin when he was younger. Yeah. Now, the thing about that one was, it was the original director of it was making a total, it was Dominion, a prequel to The Exorcist. And Warner Brothers, like, you know what? We don't like where this is going. We're going to bring Rennie Harlan in to direct it instead. And completely changes everything. Both versions of that movie are available.
Okay.
I haven't watched Dominion, though I hear it's better than the final product they released in theaters.
Okay.
Because that one, it's just the beginning. That came out. I was in my senior year of college when that came out.
That's what I was thinking. I was pregnant.
A while back.
Yeah.
And then Believer, of course, came out this past
right, and there was
October.
Also a short-lived TV show
there was.
A few years back.
And so many rip-offs over the years.
Right, which is, you know, the satire relief from it all also cuts through a lot of the tension that the movie originally brought. We ended up with a lot of satanic panic.
Yeah, this started because, if there was not The Exorcist, we probably wouldn't have The Omen or any of those other movies of that era. They made a movie called Abby. That was the blaxploitation version of The Exorcist, basically.
Okay.
And it was so similar, Warner Brothers actually sued the company that made it. And Abby is hard to come by these days.
Okay.
And then there were similar movies like Audrey Rose that came out. That was the one that had Anthony Hopkins in it. Like there was a little girl who he believed was the reincarnation of his daughter who had died in a car accident. I remember that one. I haven't seen that in years.
Oh, but, we have the Exorcism of Emily Rose.
The last Exorcism movies.
Yeah.
Which I liked the last Exorcism.
You did too.
I didn't like the sequel so much.
I don't think I've seen the sequel.
The last Exorcism, they shot that as like a documentary style.
Right.
The sequel was just a flat out. It was like it was like Blair Witch and Blair Witch 2.
Gotcha.
You know, that's exactly how it was. Although Blair Witch 2 is a better movie than the last Exorcism part 2, so... I guess the one before that was the second to last Exorcism. But yeah, that's The Exorcist. I had a good time digging into the meat of this one.
It was pretty good. If I ever go, you know, not I don't know if I'll ever watch it as closely as I did this time. I might, just to see how often I hear the clocks ticking again. Because I always notice the ticking.
I'll keep that in mind next time.
I want to watch it on a much larger screen to see if I can see the times shot and see if I can get shots of some other times when
things are changing. If there's subtext in there. So, man, you know, even though this is such a good movie, we need a little bit of a palate cleanser next time, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Should we find something from Disney?
We'll hold off on that one. I was thinking more, let's go to a time.
Time?
It's a time not yet here.
Time back time.
No, technically we're going forward and then back.
Oh, a romance movie?
Yeah, actually.
Boy meets girl.
Very much so.
They fall in love.
Boy meets girl.
They have a baby. They save humanity.
Well, they do technically have a baby, but... Boy meets girl. Boy and girl are chased by a killer robot that looks like a bodybuilder.
I know this one.
Oh, do you?
I know this one. The Iron Giant.
Jamie, you are the difference. It's a good movie, yeah, but it's not the movie I was talking about.
Rocket Man. Iron Man. I love you, 3000. Oh my gosh.
Folks.
You're gonna start crying.
Oh, you're gonna start crying in a minute. We're gonna do the Terminator.
I'll be back.
Yeah, we will be back. But as for right now, I think it's time to sign off because I have to throttle you for wasting my time in such a way. But now, in all seriousness, folks, please continue to tune in, all three of you.
I love our little Vatlings.
Yeah, Vatlings. That's what she's calling them. So, you know, I guess all that's left to say is say goodnight, Jamie.
Goodnight, Jamie.
Sometimes.